Blog Talk Radio.
British Nazi. Yeah, we have a problem here with Helga. We'll talk about her later. Good evening, and welcome to Eerie House. Oh, no, it's not Oldie Time. It's just Eerie House Radio. Sorry. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with...
Helga is a British chick? Anyway, Dave Bagley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're along here with the intelligent and the lovely...
Greetings and felicitations. CW is here. Please adjust your hard hats accordingly and get your carabiners in place. We are spelunking tonight.
It is fun to spelunk. And it's underground dwellers like ourselves that are just the ones to bring it to you. PBS Radio Mystery Theater tonight. So you know it's going to be good. An intense weekend. Yep. We were just chit-chatting before the show started, and I thought last night's all three programs were really, like, intense, high adventure, edgier seat kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that South African one, I tell you, that high adventure is a really interesting series. It's either really got you on the edge of your seat, or it's really, really, really kind of boring.
Lame.
You know, but we've had quite a few, and I still have some more in the works that are really, really good ones, and look forward to presenting those in the future. But tonight we do have, as you say, a CBS Radio Mystery Theater, an early one, a very early one.
Ooh. Ah, good. That means 70s. That means 70s. Take us back to Dave and our teenage years. You probably even weren't around yet.
Yeah, you probably were.
No, not quite. Sorry about that. But,
That's okay. You're well learned. You're well learned of the era in any event, and. Your contributions to the show have been wonderful, and we hope you're part of the Eerie House family.
Forever and ever. Ah, yes, we are a trio, the Troglodyte Three.
Yep. We were the Quixotic Quartet last night. That was kind of cool. Gar in fairly good voice last night.
Yes, He's getting his strength back, and we all are looking forward to it, not only on our show, but over on his Twitches, which happened right after tonight's show here.
Yeah, right at 8 o'clock Eastern in about 127 minutes? No, 117 minutes from now.
Bob must be having trouble getting in because he's popping out and popping in and popping out and popping in, so...
Maybe it's because he's chewing on that Dagwood sandwich. I don't know.
Yeah, the sandwich is so big it keeps hitting his keyboard. It's probably what happens there.
Something like that. Fogsbane's here with us. Hi, Fogs. Hopefully Blog Talk isn't giving you gentlemen a hard time. And Duck was with us last night. The Duck's been a regular. That's cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. And hello to all you cyber cave dwellers as well out there in the interwebs.
Yeah, and archive listeners too, of which I know there are several that are regulars to the archive, and even kind of we can guess from the metrics here on the channel where they might be from or at least staying. Getting some in England, getting some in Sweden, yeah, that's
Sweden,
key.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Sweden, yeah. Yeah.
And the UK, the UK, land of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I'm just kind of assuming that we're getting help from a military base there in the UK. So that's what I'm assuming.
Yep.
But we're not just exclusive for anybody who loves old-timey radio.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It'd be really cool if we had some South African listeners who especially recall some of the South African plays that we've had especially late.
One of the reasons I got interested in this, because I have a volunteer who I'll have to get Rod Waller to come on the show one night, but he is a native of South Africa. He worked here in Akron for Goodyear for many years. Now he does projects for them, but basically he's retired. Also has a place in Panama. He has actually recorded his programs for our service from South Africa, making that the furthest away anybody's ever recorded their shows from. So,
but I love that.
Being that South Africa didn't have television until about 1971, 72, radio was what they had. And they did not have that technology until then. They lived with radio and radio dramas and the Springbok, and we're getting the best of them. Not all, everything was the best, but what I do when I send him his reads every day, and right now he's on still traveling, I think, but I send him along a South African radio drama or comedy upon occasion.
Cool.
Along with his reads.
Good.
So we'll have to get him to come along and say what it was like not to grow up with television, because that would make him about our age, Dale.
So you would recall those days, the pre-TV
retired
days.
He's a tech. I mean, I'm gobsmacked. I'm just gobsmacked. Yeah. I mean, gobsmacked.
You know, one thing they did back when television first came there, it was probably about 4 or 5 years into it, they did their own version of War of the Worlds and freaked everybody out because they didn't tell everybody that this was just a play.
Gotta
so
love
some
it.
Things never change.
You know, in as much as television didn't really come around until the early 70s in South Africa, I wonder if they jumped right into color or if the technology had to catch up for broadcasting and making television sets affordable for the general populace to make it worthwhile. Well,
that's a great question, but I would think it would probably by then, I would think that 75% of our sets were color, so they would probably pretty much jump in with color, and getting it in from Japan and things like that would not be as expensive.
I imagine not, but that'd be interesting thing to ask, maybe.
That's a great
to find
question.
Out more.
It is.
I think of weird things. I have a weird head.
I think that's a great question. It's fabulous. So
it is. It is, really. I mean, it would be akin to the fact a place that never had internet, what a ghastly thought. I mean, if you get internet, would they start them up with dial-up, then go to cable, then dishes, and then they'd finally get Wi-Fi? I mean, yes, that is a very good question. Quite intriguing, actually.
I think if it was started later, I think the Wi-Fi would come along quicker because it's already out there in technology. Like the 5G had been in Europe for quite some time before we got it over here. And there's still places that they're not sure about using 5G, like around airports. But it's something that Europe has had for years, and it's never affected their airports. So, people get things stuck in their head. Yeah.
No kidding. I mean, and quite frankly, we're kind of primitive. They've even had the high-speed T1 network ages ago in other parts of Europe, isn't it?
And back when we were paying $60 and $70 a month or better for just our phone lines and texting, and very limited data. Well, it was like $25-$35 in Europe, and it was came with like unlimited data. So it's just
absolutely. And
we
talk about your free Wi-Fi. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, we're going down a chasm.
Yeah, well,
we're going
down to the rabbit hole we go, and back out I have to bring you. Unfortunately or unfortunately, as we move along to our CBS Radio Mystery Theater drama called The Deadly Hour.
Yep, another Elspeth Eric tale tonight.
Oh, good.
And
we get a show on her.
She usually has some interesting ideas when she writes a story. And this one, is interesting as well. I will just leave it at that.
Well, you owe us a little more info, like the episode number and broadcast date, if you would, sir.
That I could do without being a spoiler alert is episode number, way number 34, coming to us from February 9th of 1970. And for
the CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
It was a lad of 14.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the sounds of suspense, to the fear you can hear. Relax and listen to the strange tale of a strange man, though no more strange than anyone who has suffered what you might call a mutilation of the soul. And who of us has not, at one time or another, suffered such a mutilation? What means did we use to restore ourselves? How quickly did we recover? How well did we heal? The answers vary even as we vary. One man's answers are revealed, we trust, in the story which follows.
I'm cold.
So am I. The darkness I mind the most, not to be able to see you.
Oh, touch me.
That would help. Oh, my God, where are you?
Right here. Right here.
I can't find you. Keep talking.
I'm here.
I can't. Huh? Oh, here you are.
Oh, darling, don't let go.
Never. Oh, never. Never.
Our mystery drama, The Deadly Hour, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Norman Rose. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One. A person who seems strange, we call grotesque, incredible, not to be believed. We make a feeble effort to deny that he could exist. But he does exist. There he is, before our eyes, in all his strangeness. We do not believe in him because we do not know him. Because once we know, we will have to believe. And this can be a long and painful process. Listen now to the story of Martin Jerome. See if you can believe it.
Mr. Jerome, I only consented to see you because your letter sounded quite desperate. As a rule, I only see patients on referral. But your letter, may I read it to you? Perhaps it will help us to get started. Last night, I heard you being interviewed on a radio program. In the dark of my room, in the darkest hour of the night, I thought, here is a man who can help me to solve the awful predicament in which I find myself. I enclose a stamped, addressed envelope for your reply, since I have no phone. I am counting on you. Sincerely, Martin C. Jerome. Well, Mr. Jerome, the hour is passing, and I don't want you to waste your money. Take your time. Take your time if you have difficulty in talking. I'll wait. Doctor, did you say something, Mr. Jerome? Doctor, you... Yes. You are the first person I have spoken to in 25 years. You said 25 years? Yes. I begin to understand your silence. Can you tell me what drove you into this silence? I married a woman... Yes. The most desirable woman in the world.
Yes, that's all it takes.
My adored one. I never thought that an insignificant man like myself could even aspire to possess such a woman. And the day she said those words to me, I could scarcely believe my ears.
You're a dear, Martin, and I'd love to marry you.
Helen, I can't think why you'd want a man like me.
Oh, because you're sweet. Let's get married right away. What about next week?
The world changed completely for me. Everything became important, immediate. The sun shone just to keep me warm, and the breeze blew to make me cool. Me, Martin Jerome, me. I had been so, so blessed. Yes, it was a beautiful wedding. Helen had a great deal of money, and I was fairly well off. Many people came to the church, and even more to the reception, people of prominence. I knew them all. All but one. He was tall, unusually tall, as I am unusually short. He was handsome, as I am not. He was charming, self-assured, very much at his ease, all of which I have never been. You couldn't help noticing him. Helen, who's that very tall man talking to your mother, the pale man with the black mustache?
I've no notion, love. It's probably someone Mother invited.
Good looking, isn't he?
Sort of. Come on. Time to cut the cake.
We sailed for Europe. My head was swimming with visions of the life I had embarked on. The good life, the beautiful life. One night on the ship, we were at dinner. Helen, look over there. To your right, against the wall, sitting by himself. Isn't that the man who was at our wedding?
500 people at our wedding, love.
He's getting up from the table. A tall man, black mustache. Your mother must have invited him, you said.
Well, then I guess she did.
After dinner, we danced for a while. Then Helen said she had a headache, but I should stay and enjoy myself. Well, I tried, but I couldn't enjoy myself without her. I was too much in love for that. I watched the dancers for a while, drank a brandy. I managed to kill an hour, and then I went down to our stateroom. Helen wasn't there. When I stepped back out into the corridor, there she was, coming out of another stateroom about 6 doors from ours.
Darling!
You weren't in our room. I didn't know what to think. You said that you had a headache.
I've been doing a little detective work. You were so anxious to know who the tall man was. Well, I found out. He's not precisely a friend. His mother came to the wedding and dragged him along.
Helen, you were in his stateroom.
I ran into him in the corridor, and he said to come in for a nightcap. Let's go to bed. Our stateroom is much nicer than his, by the way.
We went to Paris. And then because she loved to ski, we went to St. Moritz. She was very good on skis, effortless as a bird flying. I watched and watched and never got tired of watching. And then one day, there he was again, the tall man.
I've got to catch the ski tow. Wait for me.
Helen, Helen, he's here.
Who's here?
The man from the wedding, the man from the ship.
Oh, is he here? Oh, so he is. Well, I'm off. Wait for me.
After St. Moritz, we came back to the city and moved into an apartment. I went to work. We made friends. Helen grew lovelier every day. And she was her loveliest the day she told me that we would have a child.
Tell me about that.
Well, Helen was very, very lighthearted, very casual about the prospect. But I...
Yes. How did you feel?
Well, it's hard to tell you, Doctor. Oh, I know every man is what, excited, happy, I don't know, but I felt bowed down, Doctor, actually crushed by my own good fortune, that a man like myself, so petty, so pitiable, should be given a child by a woman like Helen.
Have you always thought of yourself as petty and pitiable?
I have.
Why?
Because I am.
Go on, please.
I could scarcely concentrate on my work once I'd heard the good news. Helen was on my mind all the time. And one day, I suddenly couldn't bear being in the office, couldn't bear being anywhere except where she was. And I rushed home. I suppose you know what I found.
I think you'd best tell me.
I hurried to the bedroom looking for her. I burst through the door. And in the bed, our bed, there he was.
The man from the wedding.
From the wedding, from the ship, from the ski tow. He looked at me. Standing in the doorway,
He said not a word, but his red lips smiled. And then, well, then the bathroom door opened, and Helen took a step into the room. Helen, all scrubbed and fragrant. She was wearing something pink. I think it was made of lace. And she, Doctor, she smiled, too. While I stood in the doorway, she smiled. And then she said, well, love, now you know. And the world rocked, and I felt as though I had died, but I hadn't. I was still standing there. Doctor, I've never told what I just told you to anyone before. Not to anyone? No. It wasn't simply grief that I felt. It was my pride that had been destroyed. My marriage to Helen had built up a sort of pride. I thought, if she loves me, then I must be something. Oh, it is not a good thing, Doctor, to build your pride on what other people think of you, or seem to think.
No, no, it isn't.
So I cleared out. That was 25 years ago. And I have not said a word to anyone until today.
How have you lived?
Well, I had a business, import and export. I kept the business, but I dismissed my staff. I had the phone removed and made arrangements to conduct my affairs by mail. I took a one-room flat with a little kitchen, a bed, a chest of drawers, an easy chair with an ottoman. And to one side of the chair, my hi-fi stereo set and my records. To the other side, my books. After my work, I'd sit in my easy chair with my feet on the ottoman, listen to my records and read. Only writers who are dead, however. I'd read till about 10 o'clock, eat a little something, and go to bed. The next morning, go to work. Work all day and do the same thing all over again.
No relaxation of any kind? No enjoyment?
Or a vacation in the summer. I shut down the office for 2 weeks and take my vacation.
Where do you go?
I take a train. Two trains, actually, and a bus to a little town on the coast called Marsh Hills. You've probably never heard of it.
I'm afraid I haven't.
No one has. There's no reason why anyone should.
And you spend your 2 weeks in Marsh Hills?
Oh, no. No, I merely stable my horse there.
You have a horse?
About 15 miles from Marsh Hills, Doctor, close to the sea. There is a cave hollowed out of the rock by the waves. And when I get to Marsh Hills, I arrive every year on the same day. They have my horse ready for me, and I ride the 15 miles to the cave, and there I spend my vacation.
In a cave? For 2 weeks?
Well, I walk. I canter my horse on the beach. I gather what edible herbs there are growing in the rocks. I boil them. They're very tasty, really. And at the end of 2 weeks, I return my horse to the stable and take my bus and the two trains back to the city.
And you've lived this way for 25 years.
Oh, yes. But, Doctor, last summer something happened. I arrived in Marsh Hills, as always. My horse was waiting for me, as always. And we started off at a walk for the cave by the sea. There is always a certain excitement when I begin to smell the sea. And I know that soon I shall be out of sight and sound of any human being. There will be only the sea, sun, the wind, and my cave. It is the most thrilling moment of the year for me. I suppose it's the only one. Soon I will have my solitude. At last, I'm on the sand. My horse feels the excitement as I do. I feel him extend himself. And as we round the last bend in the shoreline, I see it. I see it, my cave, my refuge. But last summer,
yes,
I pulled my horse up at the entrance to the cave. I sat listening to the rhythms of the ocean. And then, all at once, I heard a sound. A sound that I've never heard before in that deserted spot. And the sound, Doctor, was coming from inside my cave. Never. Never had I felt such anger. I was faint with hatred. I dismounted and I crept to the side of the cave where I knew it sloped to the ground. Quietly climbed to the roof.
I found a tiny chink in the stone, no more than an eighth of an inch wide. I put my ear to it. Beneath me, I heard laughter. Laughter and tender words and all the sticky, silly sounds that lovers make.
Are you my girl?
Oh, so much your girl.
How much?
This much.
I can't hardly see. How much is this much? It's too dark in this place.
Then come here.
Uh-huh.
Oh, darling, darling love.
They were kissing. They were using my sacred sanctuary for lovemaking. I almost fell from the roof of the cave. I struggled to stay where I was, and my feet dislodged a shower of stones.
What was that?
Sounds like a rock slide.
Yes, some rocks in front of the entrance. Lots of them.
Hey, maybe we'd better move them.
Oh, we can still get out. Let's stay a little longer. I love this place.
All right.
I climbed down. My brain was on fire. My whole body was on fire. I had never felt such hatred as I felt then. Not since... Well, Doctor, you know when, I've told you. I took hold of a big boulder. Yes, yes, these skinny arms went round it. This puny body pushed it, pushed and shoved till it stood against the mouth of the cave, was tight against the mouth of the cave. I heard the voices of the lovers fainter now from inside.
George, it's really dark. Darker than before.
Aaron, there's no light at all.
I had sealed them in.
What is darkness? It is the state from which we emerge, and it is the condition to which we return. We come from the darkness of the womb. We leave for the darkness of the tomb. In between is light and life. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
And we'll be here to give you Part Two in just a little bit. Yeah.
Sealed away.
Well, interesting. You think the narrator is a little wacky?
Norman Rose? No. He's the voice of God.
Well.
I don't know. He might be a tad pitch, if you know what I mean.
I'm thinking.
I think he lacks a little bit of self-confidence there, for one thing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that.
He's also a sucker. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it when he goes, "What made you kind of crazy?" "Well, I got married." And he's waiting for more? There's nothing more to say. That's what did it. No.
I haven't spoken for 20 years. Why not? I didn't want to interrupt my wife.
That's right. I wasn't allowed to speak. Oh,
my.
She told me not to. No, jeez.
I'm the lord and master of my house, and my wife told me I have the permission to say that.
That's right.
That's right, yeah. Oh, my
goodness. Such a roundabout way to get to your favorite vacation spot. First you drive there, then you take a bus there.
Yeah, two trains and a horse, and then you find somebody else took up your bedrock cave. You know, come on.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Get over it, dude. Cry in your millions.
Yeah. Poor thing.
Yeah, just
blot your tears on a $100 bill. Ben Franklin won't mind.
That's right.
On there.
You'll get no sympathy from Erie House.
Why, from a guy who's shut up for 20 years, he's sure spilling his guts now.
Yeah, now it's like
no kidding.
Already. But we'll see what kind of what he's done besides locking him up in the cave.
Yes.
What has he done?
What Absolutely. And what an interesting place to make whoopee in a cave. Get a room, people.
No comment. No. Yeah, keeping that one to myself. Good story. Number 34, so it's got to be in the first year, first season, no?
Yeah, in the second month. Second month, because they were on every Monday, every day, Monday through Sunday. Yep.
Wow, and I missed it. man, it's so good to have that much material to know that we have a whole lot of radio to share.
That's right. During that time, he also did a one-season run of the General Mills Adventure Theater. I think we've shared one of those, one or two. I think we did Journey to the Center of the Earth, and we also did the we might not have done the other one. The one about the Nautilus submarine.
I don't think we did.
Jules Verne,
yes.
Ah, 20,000
Leagues.
We may have done Captain, a couple of those already.
Captain Nemo.
You know, I thought that was only a sub sandwich, you know?
What, a Captain Nemo?
Yeah.
A Captain Nemo? Still can't hold a candle to a Dagwood.
Yeah.
Nope.
No.
The ultimate sandwich. The ultimate. Which, in my opinion, requires a visit to an Italian deli before assembly.
There you go.
Ah.
Yes. Got to have those Italian lunch meats.
Meatball sandwich.
But you also need to go to the produce section to make sure you got lots of veggies to stack on that Dagwood, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's a must.
Definitely. You got your delicious prosciutto, ham, your capicola.
Oh, yeah. All that good heart-clogging goodness. Mm-mm-mm.
Oh, yeah. That pepperoni.
Beef spaghetti.
And bologna. Oh. Spaghetti.
Oh. Yep. Remember that commercial?
Yeah, throw some spaghetti on that sandwich.
Beefaroni, beefaghetti, with the two little monsters, the two-headed monster guy. Beefaroni, beefaghetti. Oh, used to show that on Erie House TV when I had to fill in little spots. Anyway, let's get into part two of The Deadly Hour from CBS Radio Theater. Delightful.
Marvin Jerome, 50 years old, has not uttered a single word to a living soul in 25 years. But now in the office of an attentive psychiatrist, it seems the dear man can't stop talking.
After I had pushed and shoved the big rock into the entrance to the cave, Doctor, I stood for a few seconds, panting from the exertion and oppressed by the silence. There was only the sound of the wind. I thought of the lovers locked inside. What were they doing? What were they saying? I felt that I must hear their voices again, as though their words, which had driven me near to madness, were essential now to keep me sane. I scrambled back to the roof of the cave and put my ear once again to the narrow crack through which I could hear them.
George, There was a little light before. Now there's none.
More rocks must have fallen.
I didn't hear them. I heard something that didn't sound like rocks falling. Oh,
come on, we've got to clear the entrance.
Come where? I don't know where the entrance is anymore. It's so dark.
Well, take my hand. I think I know which direction.
I can't even see your hand. Don't you have a match?
I may have. I have a few.
Well, light one.
I will.
Oh, went out.
Now, don't panic.
Why, another. We've got to get out of here.
Just don't panic.
All right, now, careful. Be careful.
I am being careful.
Oh, darling.
Huh?
Now, I found the one that went out. It was right by my foot. Let me light it from yours.
Yeah, good girl, good girl.
All right, George, there's the entrance.
Don't let your match go out.
Don't you let yours.
Hey, look, see? Just a whole bunch of stones. Come on, let's start clearing them away.
Oh, both matches. Well,
that's all right. We know where we are. We're right by the entrance. Come on, let's get started.
George.
What, Dolly?
We'll get out, won't we?
Of course we'll get out. Now, keep working. Don't stop.
At my listening post atop the cave, I heard them so kindly toward each other, so reassuring, so united in their purpose. I pressed my ear closer to the crack in the cave's roof. I was frantic to hear every word.
George, it isn't getting any lighter. Shouldn't it start to get lighter?
Yes, it should.
Oh, why doesn't it?
How should I know why? I'm sorry, darling.
Oh, that's all right.
Marion.
What, darling?
We've cleared all the stones away.
But there's no light.
No. None.
Why not? Why isn't there?
Because there's something huge. A big boulder, I think, up against the entrance.
Oh, move it. Move it.
I will. It's heavy. It must be huge.
Well, how did it get there?
It fell from someplace, Lord knows where.
Can't you move it?
I'm trying.
Let me help.
Put your shoulder up against it.
That's what I'm doing. Can't you see?
No, I can't see. Do you think I could? Can you see?
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
All right, let's try together now. One, two, three. Jump!
I don't think we moved it at all.
No, not a centimeter.
Darling, you know what the trouble is? We're tired, that's all. Clearing away all the stones just took our strength. I haven't had anything to eat this morning. We need to rest for a little while. Then we'll be able to move it.
Oh, you're probably right.
So let's lie down right here by the entrance so we know where we are.
First, I want to light a match.
Why do you want to do that?
I want to look at your face.
Oh. Light.
This is the face I love.
This is the face I love.
It's dark again.
No matter. When we wake up, we'll find our way into the light. Sleep now, my darling.
The thought of them lying there. No, the vision of them, for I could see them. The image was so strong. The two of them pressed close, their arms entwined, their hands clasped. The two young bodies fitted so tightly together against the dark and the cold. A nameless memory crowded in on me, and I knew what it was I remembered and would not name. And it was love. It was love that I remember. I'm sorry, Doctor.
For what?
For crying like this.
If there is anything to be sorry for, it's that it took you so long to cry.
All I really know is that when that word came into my head...
What word?
The word love. I shrank from it as though it was tainted. Poison.
Yes. And then?
And then? Oh, then. Then, Doctor, I climbed down. I got on my horse and rode back to Marsh Hills. I took the bus and the two trains back to the city.
You what?
I opened up my office. I took the dust covers off the furniture in my flat, and I resumed my old routine.
Didn't you ever think of them?
I'd shut them out of my mind, just as I'd shut them in the cave.
You didn't worry about them or anything?
Well, they had each other.
Mr. Jerome, I have to tell you, I can't help being
shocked. Forgive me. Go on.
Well, after a while, the old feeling of loneliness came back. You see, I missed them.
Missed them?
Yes, it may sound strange.
Indeed, it does.
I began imagining what they might be saying to each other. I couldn't know for sure, of course, but I imagined.
I'm cold.
So am I.
I'm hungry.
I can't find you. Keep talking. Keep talking.
I'm here. I'm here.
I can't. Oh, there you are.
Oh, darling, don't let go.
Oh, never.
Never.
I invented their conversations, of course, but I was fairly sure my inventions were accurate, or nearly so.
You simply left them there
for 2 weeks. And then I was suddenly seized with the desire to hear their voices once more before they were silent forever. I closed the office, closed the flat, took the 2 trains and the bus to Marsh Hills. And they were surprised at the stable to see me back again so soon, of course, but they saddled my horse and I set off for the cave. The old excitement came back when I started to smell the salt air. There was the familiar thrill which I had looked forward to each summer for 25 years, till they had invaded my kingdom by the sea. Such a tiny kingdom, a cave no bigger than a tool shed, with no comfort, no conveniences, and they had taken it away from me. Ah, on the sand at last, we run the last bend, and I see it. My cave, my refuge. And even from a distance, I can see that the big boulder still stands wedged into the entrance.
What did you do then, Mr. Jerome?
I dismounted. I climbed to the roof of the cave. After all, I had made the long and rather arduous trip to hear their voices once more, if I could. I crouched down. I put my ear to the narrow crack.
And were they still alive?
Oh, yes. Yes. Weak, of course, but alive. Oh, yes, they were still alive.
Are you all right, George?
Yes. Are you?
I'm all right. If we only had something to eat. Anything.
Don't think about it.
You think there's any use trying to move that big rock again?
No.
I guess you're right.
Well, we've got about a third of the energy we had to start with. We better save whatever we've got.
Save it for what, George?
I don't know.
I know. For when somebody finds us. It's possible, isn't it, for somebody to find us?
Of course.
Oh, George, I'm thirsty.
Can you find the place where that trickle of water runs down the side?
I think so.
Feel along the cave wall to your right.
It's so black in here.
You should be there by now.
Light the match.
No, it's the only one we have.
George, wasn't there sort of a ridge, an indentation where the water trickled down in some moss?
That's right.
And I think I found it.
Oh, good.
There's no water.
There must be.
There isn't.
Then you're in the wrong place.
Then you find it. You're so smart.
I know exactly where. It's about here. I remember this. It ought to be right here.
Yes, it ought to be, but it isn't. It ought to be, but it isn't.
Marion, shh, shh, shh.
There's no food. Now there's no water. What will become of
us? Shh, shh, shh.
Doctor, I wanted to call to them. I wanted to say, wait for rain, because as soon as a good rain came, the water would start to trickle down the cave wall again. But I couldn't speak. I don't know why I couldn't. Do you?
I have some notion, yes.
Why couldn't I? I'd rather you told me the rest of the story first.
All right, Doctor, if you say so.
Well, They must have gone to sleep after that. I think they probably slept a lot. I know that I didn't hear anything more after that until much later.
I wonder what day it is.
Well, it was Saturday when we came down here, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, it must be, I don't know.
We've been here a week, I think.
More than that.
Much more?
About a week and a half.
Oh. You think it's Wednesday? Or?
I think so.
If it's Wednesday, then we've been here 11 days.
Something like that. What difference does it make?
I'd just like to know, that's all. Oh, don't be angry, darling.
Doctor, I had the craziest impulse to whisper to them, it's Tuesday. I almost laughed. Why do these ludicrous ideas come into our heads at the weirdest moments of our lives? Perhaps it wasn't as ludicrous as you thought. Of course it was. I was there to watch these people die. Listen to them die is more like it. And I still wanted to tell them what day of the week it was. If that's not ludicrous, I don't know what is. Tell me, what happened next? I went to sleep on the roof of the cave. After the sun came up in the morning, I got a sandwich out of my saddlebag and a flask of brandy and sat on the sand for a while, watching the ocean. And then I went back to my listening post.
George.
Yes?
I'm going to try walking around a little. Oh, Lord. This darkness is driving me mad.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Let me have a match.
No.
Oh, give it to me.
I won't.
What was that?
I heard something.
I stumbled over something.
Well, look for it. The fish are on.
That's what I'm doing. Got it.
What is it?
Feels like a little sort of a pan.
Pan?
Well, about 4-5 inches wide.
What?
Enamel, I think. Feels like enamel. It's a little pan to cook things in, the sort of thing campers might use.
Wait. That means somebody's been here before.
And that means whoever was here could come back.
Or somebody else could. I mean, this cave is a place people come to. We're not the only ones. We're not the first. Other people have...
They'd stumbled across the little enamel pan I had used to boil my herbs. I couldn't bring myself to speak to them, but I took a packet of matches, the cardboard kind, and I wrote on it, I am here. Just that. I am here. And I slipped it through the crack in the roof of the cave.
Three little words. I am here. I suppose the most cherished trio of words in our language consists of I love you. But surely there are times of trouble when I am here is even more welcome. I'll be back shortly with Act Three.
This is WBBM Chicago.
WBBM. Good old woman.
Yep. So yeah, this guy's gone a little kooky. A little off his nut.
Yep. Just a bit. Yep, he's got windmills in the splinters of his mind, something to that effect.
Taunting, I say.
Yes. I shall taunt you a second time. English pig dog.
God, that was a great movie.
We are looking for a holy grail. We already have one.
Yeah. We already have one.
I told him we already have one.
Yeah, it'll happen.
It's intriguing how
types.
He went from it's intriguing how he went from being so self-effacing to now being so vengeful, maniacal.
Oh, our anti-hero, do you mean, tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, he certainly has changed his approach.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
Now, this all happened 20 years ago, right? He's telling the story of what happened 20 years ago. I'm just making sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps his conscience finally caught up to him. Who knows?
Or perhaps he just couldn't keep it to himself anymore, all the wonderful, savory things that he did, the tortures and all this sort of stuff. He's just bragging. He's bragging. Look what I did.
Yep, and I am here. Now bragging to them. I am here.
And you are not.
Yep, 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 yep.
That's right.
Yep. I shall taunt you again.
But you know, I'll ask him to give him a shrubbery, you know? Next thing you ask.
So saith the night you say me.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yes, indeed.
Complete our radio drama, which does not star Eric Idle. The Deadly Hour from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. It's a conclusion.
It is the disease of not listening, the malady of not marking, that I am troubled withal. So said Henry IV, according to William Shakespeare. But the disease that troubles Martin Jerome is listening too closely, and his malady is marking too well.
I pushed the packet of matches with its absurd message down through the crack in the cave with a little stick. I heard it drop. I knew it had reached them, even before I heard Marion speak.
George.
Huh?
Something just dropped onto my shoulder. George, light the match.
Marion, it's our last match.
I don't care, light it. I have to know what fell on my shoulder.
I don't like to use
George,
up our last...
George, please, if you don't, I...
All right. Take it easy. Do you see anything?
It hit my shoulder, and then it... Here it is. George!
What?
It's matches! It's a whole fold... Of matches.
You're kidding.
I'm not. There's something written on it here, Joe. Wait a minute. It says, I am here.
Who's here?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. That's the end of the match. I held it till I burned my fingers. I'm sorry. I couldn't.
All right. What? We have matches now. Can you see?
It isn't signed at all. It just says, I am here. That's all.
But who's here?
Doesn't matter, does it? Somebody's here. That's what counts.
Why didn't he say something? Call out to us or something. Tell us that everything will be all right.
Maybe he's gone for help.
Oh, yes, that must be it.
Yes, that is it. It's all right now. It's all right as long as somebody's here.
Couldn't stand their joy over my simple-minded message. They seemed like silly children, as silly as I felt myself. For I hadn't the faintest notion what I was going to do once I had made this strange contact with them. I climbed down and sat on the beach staring at the water until I fell asleep. I must have slept the rest of that day and all night because it was the sun coming up behind the horizon that woke me. I went back to the cave, climbed to the roof, and put my ear to the crack.
George, I can't stand. Where is he?
How should I know? Stop asking me.
He wouldn't give us a message like that. He wouldn't write, "I'm here on a package of matches," and then just go away, would he?
How do I know? You keep asking me as though I had an answer.
Oh, I'm not hungry anymore.
I haven't been hungry for a long time.
I just feel terribly weak.
Damn it, I know. I know. Now, will you shut up? Just shut up.
We'll die here, George.
Be quiet.
No water. No food. We'll die here.
I said shut up.
Whoever wrote that note must have been a madman.
Whoever he was, wherever he was, he's gone away.
Yes. And we'll die in this cave.
I don't intend to die in this cave.
Oh. And just what do you think you'll do about it?
Something?
Nothing you can do.
I'm just not going to die.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah. You are. Make up your mind to it. What are you doing now?
I'm going to light a match.
Matches? Have matches. No food. No water. Just matches. George.
I'm not going to die. Not yet. Not me.
George!
Not me.
I felt as though the world had stopped. Actually, I had stopped. All at once, I knew what I must do. I didn't want to go completely out of my mind. I clambered down from the roof. I ran to the cave entrance. I tried to move the big boulder that blocked it. I knew even before I tried that I wouldn't be able to do it. But my mind was working brilliantly. I ran to where my horse's saddle and bridle lay on the sand. And after taking it all apart, I began working to put it together again for a new purpose. Oh, I used everything. The girths, the reins, the stirrup leathers. And in an hour, I had fashioned a crude device. I led my horse to the cave entrance. Somehow I wrapped the girth around the boulder and made it firm. The reins circled my horse's shoulders. And then I stood back and gave him a sharp rap on the flank. He moved. And the boulder moved. The boulder moved away from the entrance to the cave. There was room for me to squeeze through. Just inside, I found them. She lay there in a faint. He lay across her. And his teeth were sunk in her breast.
Mr. Jerome, would you like to wait till another time to tell me this?
No. I must tell it to you now. I carried their bodies out, and I put them on the back of my horse. I threw a halter over his head and led him the 15 miles to Marsh Hills. It took all day because I stopped every hour to be sure that they were both breathing. There's a doctor in Marsh Hills, and I left them on his doorstep. I rang his bell and fled. The next day, I waited outside the doctor's house until I saw an ambulance drive up and take the young couple away. They were able to walk, so I knew they were all right, or soon would be. I went back to the city, but not before I had memorized the name of the hospital, which was printed on the ambulance. And from the city, I wrote to the hospital. I pretended to be a concerned relative. They answered me. They said that the girl, Marion, had already been discharged, but that they were keeping the young man for a few days more. They would let me know when he could go home. And they did let me know. I remember it was on a Sunday. And as he walked out of the hospital, I was waiting for him. He didn't seem at all surprised to see me. I took his hand. He came with me quietly. We boarded the bus. We took the two trains, no trouble at all. And when we got to the city, We went to my flat. He undressed, bathed, and got into my bed, and he went to sleep. That was 6 months ago, Doctor. and he's been there with me ever since.
He's all right.
Oh, he's very well. I sleep on the floor now. He sleeps in the bed. I cook his breakfast, come home from the office and cook his lunch. And, of course, I make dinner for us both at night. And, we listen to music. I read a book, but he just listens to the music. Oh, yes, he's in good health.
Mr. Jerome, the hour is up.
You want me to leave?
Not quite yet. You've told me an amazing story. As amazing a story as I've ever heard. But tell me, just what is it you expect of me? What do you want me to do for you?
Huh? Oh, why, nothing, Doctor.
Nothing? Nothing at all?
I don't want help for myself, Doctor. I want help for the young man. You see, in the 6 months he's been staying with me, he hasn't uttered a word. Not one word.
Go see the doctor, young man. Yes, George, he can help you to unburden yourself. He will make the words pour out in full confession, and you'll feel the better for it. Why, look. Look what he has just done for Martin Jerome. As the deadly hour passed. I'll be back shortly. You've heard of the seven wonders of the world? The Grand Canyon, the Taj Mahal, Niagara Falls, and I forget the other four. No matter. Because they are simple things compared to the human mind. In all its deviousness, all its twists and drifts. Why, I could sit in wonder at the human mind for the rest of my life.
Not me.
Our cast included Norman Rose, Marion Seldes, John Barragray, and Jack Grimes. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
That's impossible.
Why is it impossible? It's all right for the simple-minded Hicks up here to swallow that superstitious nonsense, but me, I'm a doctor.
There has to be a reasonable, logical, rational explanation for what happened to George Morrissey.
Oh, there is, there is. He offended the spirit of the mountain.
Oh, you consider that reasonable, logical, rational?
Would you feel better if I said there's something up in that mountain, a virus, a bacillus, a fungus, which somehow causes immediate aging?
It would be a more rational explanation.
You mean more acceptable.
I want to know what you believe.
I believe the evidence. If you go up there, you can die.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre.
Macabre!
Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Don't say it's macabre.
Don't say you're wrong. Harum, harum, harum.
Exciting tale from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Always a good one. Did we learn anything on this deal?
Did we learn anything? Boy, how could we not?
Oh, fine. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Yeah. big, big, big apologies to Gar. Don't let loneliness trap you, or else it may just cave you in. It's more not deserved. Okay.
Yeah, that's how you call someone in a cave to try to find them.
That's true. Yeah.
Cup your hands around your mouth and yell.
Uh-oh, somebody woke up here.
This means war.
War.
We come in peace. We come in peace.
This they did.
We just need Tom Jones now. Jim Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Not James Brown, Jim Brown.
Jim Brown, yeah.
Ah, yes.
He punched out some of them aliens, man.
He did.
He did. Outstanding.
Tough guy.
Boom,
tough
boom.
Guy.
Right cross. Right cross. Left cross. Jab, jab, jab.
And Sarah Jessica Parker and, what was it, Pierce Brosnan? Lost their heads.
Oh, yes.
That does remind me, Sarah Jessica Parker did do one CBS Radio Mystery Theater. I'll have to look that one up.
Ooh. Hey, we have
Ooh,
to check that
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Definitely. She's one of the Hocus Pocus sisters.
Yes, she is. And trying to think what else she... I guess she's done a lot of different things. But she did Sex in the City. Yeah, I never watched
The City,
it.
Of course.
I watched a single episode of that.
Well, I'm not interested in the details of her personal life, but or where she had or what she did. That's of no concern of mine. It's none of my business. So, yeah.
Go for the other white meat. Good old Bob. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There you go.
Go for the other white meat.
Go for the other white meat. Oh, Lord. Oh, my. Now, there's some vittles right there. I'll bet you Greeny Clampett could make something out of that.
Oh, yeah, that would be one of Granny's specialities.
Greasy, grimy gopher guts. And marmalade monkey meat. Oh, dear. We got time.
We should probably
get that wheel, maybe.
Spin that wheel.
If you say so, Gobble, 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 gobble. Spin, 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 spin.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
There's a new streamlined train in operation these days, and one of the stops on its run is the city of Wistful Vista. And here, just getting settled in their compartment for a holiday trip to Aunt Sarah's, are a couple of people known as Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, my, isn't this a beautiful train, McGee?
Oh, it'll do. Put the bags over there, Porter, both of them.
Yes, sir. There you are, sir. And here's a paper bag for the ladies.
Oh, I thought they just gave you those on airplanes.
This is for your hat, madam.
Oh.
Thanks, Porter. Here you are. Buy yourself a few shares of AT&T.
My goodness, at a nickel a share, that'll be 5 shares. Thank you.
Ah, boy, this is the way to travel, you know it? First class. This train is just like the one when I was in vaudeville. I and Fred Nitton used to sit up all night in the smoker wishing we could ride on one like it.
It certainly is comfortable, and everything is... Oh, look out the window, McGee.
Uh-huh.
Look how fast we're going. Heavenly days, those telephone poles look like a board fence.
We haven't started yet, kiddo. That is a board fence.
All right.
Hey, does it seem a little chilly in here? I'll open this window and let some of the cold air blow out.
That thing is stuck.
McGee. Huh? This train is air-conditioned. The window isn't supposed to open.
No train window is supposed to open, Molly, but I'll raise this window or I'll raise the roof off of this dad-ratted cinder bucket.
Look, now, if you're chilly, dearie, turn on the heat. The knob's right there.
Huh? Oh, okay.
Oh, for goodness sakes, company. Come in.
Oh, it's the porter. I didn't want any change, porter. Keep the whole quarter.
Yes, sir. Excuse me, folks, but the lady next door asked me to make up a drawing room, and I wonder if she could just sit in here a few minutes till I get it ready.
Well, of course. Tell her to come right in, Porter.
Yes, thank you, ma'am. You just sit in here, Miss L'Amour. It won't take long.
Thank you, Porter. I hope I'm not intruding.
Oh, not at all. Come right in.
I'd go back to the club car, but I haven't got a club, and you can't get a seat without one. So, excuse me. I'm Dorothy L'Amour.
Well, I'm glad to know you, sis. I'm Fibber McGee, and this is... Dorothy L'Amour! My gosh, they got everything on this train. I just turn on the heat control and in walks Dorothy L'Amour. This is my wife, Molly, Miss L'Amour.
Well, how do you do? I'm sure it's awfully nice meeting you. Do sit down.
Thank you, Ms. McGee. Where?
What? Oh, McGee moved those salted peanuts and the radio and the comic books and the picnic hamper.
Yeah. Sit over here, Dorothy. Dottie. No use being formal, I always say. Feel like we've known you for years. Anyhow, I've seen all your pictures.
Oh, they weren't mine. I just acted in them, I thought.
Well, you were great. We show people always stick up for other show people, you know. All us show people in show business. We all like to watch other show people, show. Know what I mean?
Oh, are you in show business, Mr. McGee?
A good question, and a frequent one.
Sure, I was in vaudeville for years. You've probably heard of Powers Elephants and Fink's Mules.
Oh, of course. Which ones were you?
I was the act to come on right behind them. McGee and Nittany, snappy songs and witty things. We'd open in wands, see, singing Yankee Doodle and waving little American flags.
Oh, now, McGee, Miss L'Amour isn't interested in your vaudeville.
Well, of course, I'm in radio now, and radio is...
Tell us about yourself, Miss L'Amour. My, it must be exciting living in Hollywood. I've seen pictures of your home, and it's beautiful.
Thanks. We get a lot of pleasure out of it. We enjoy our pool a lot in the summer.
So do I, sis. What do you like best, snooker or just straight rotation? With an extra dime on the eight ball in the side pocket. Hey, I'll shoot you again sometime.
No, dearie. Miss L'Amour means your swimming pool.
Oh, that pool. Oh, well. Oh, they're okay if you don't like to swim.
Well, you see, in the picture business,
picture business. I may come out there and take a fling at it myself one of these days. As a matter of fact, the story of my own life would make a fascinating picture.
Well, if they can do Al Jolson twice, they ought to be able to do yours once.
Of course, I suppose my natural resemblance to Ronald Coleman would be against me, but I think
to
I...
To whom?
Ronnie Coleman.
Oh.
Glad you noticed it.
Well, I thought you said.
Everybody says I look enough like Ronald Coleman to be his, well, his...
His gardener. With dirt on your knees and a rake in your hand, and it's uncanny.
Well, on the other hand, I've had experience, too. I've already been in one picture, you know, Dottie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you ever run across the theater that's showing a newsreel of the 1932 Legion Convention, the guy dropping paper bags of water out of the hotel window, seventh floor, second from the fire escape, that's me.
Oh, wonderful. I'll watch for it when it comes to the neighborhood theater.
You know, I just loved all those Road 2 pictures you made with Bob Hope, Miss L'Amour.
Your room's ready now, Miss L'Amour.
Thank you, Porter. Miss McGee, it's been awfully nice visiting with you both.
Oh, we've loved every minute of it.
Sure, we'll be seeing you, Dottie. We'll drop in on you out there when I decide to crash pictures.
Well, just from what I've seen of your talents tonight, Mr. McGee, I can say one thing.
Yeah?
If you ever leave radio and go into motion pictures, it'll be a wonderful thing for millions of people. Good night.
Hey, Molly. Did you hear what she said?
Yes.
If I quit radio and go in the movies, it'll be a wonderful thing for millions of people.
Yes.
Hey, you think she meant millions of movie fans or radio fans? Did she mean it would be a wonderful thing if I got out of radio? Don't she know how the radio audience reacts to me?
How?
Bored! Stay out of there!
He wasn't talking to you, Ronald. Now lock the door. I'm sleepy.
You
got Fibber McGee and Molly riding the train there. About 15 minutes, we're gonna wrap up this show, and you can get on over to the Twitches and catch our pal, our dear friend, Gargoyle on Horrible Horrors, starring Gargoyle. The old pregnant pause routine.
Ah, yes.
Pregnant pause? I think you gave birth to it.
Something like that. Yeah, I could really just, I won't. Not this time. It's just not, I won't. Tempting, but no, I better not. I behave myself a little bit.
I did scrape a wooden nickel together out of sawdust. How about sliding something into that old jukebox there?
We certainly have the time. Why not? Why don't you step on over to the jukebox and cram that quarter or whatever coin denomination you have.
Sawdust. I'll reach over and throw that in the slot. Hey, we're
Connie Haynes sings the new hit tune, I Couldn't Sleep Awake Last Night.
I couldn't sleep awake last night because we had that silly fight. I thought my heart would break the whole night through. I knew that you'd be sorry, and I'm sorry too. I didn't have my favorite dream, the one in which I hold you tight. I had to call you up this morning to see if everything was still all right. Wink last night, I didn't have my favorite dream, the one in which I hold you tight. I had to call you up this morning to see if everything was still alright. Yes, I had to call you up this morning, 'cause I couldn't sleep a wink last night.
93 KHJ double play.
Well, we're starting off with a vocal chorus by Kenny Gardner. Use Your Imagination. Around you.
there lies pure enchantment in the sky and endless joys you never knew. Behind every cloud there's a so lovely star. Behind every star there's a lovelier one by far. So use your imagination. Just take this motto for your theme, and soon you will dance on the road to sweet romance, and every day will be a dream.
Music takes me back. I was fortunate enough, Dave, when I was working at the Marriott West, okay,
mm-hmm.
over there on 150th, the bar was called Shenanigans at the time. I was working there, and they had a very creative, I thought, food and beverage manager, who was my boss, and he decided to do different activities on various days of the night, and it was like a full-time gig for me, so... you know, one night we did 50s, 60s, oldies, and they had, like, all kind of motif. But what this really reminds me of is our big band night, which I believe was Sundays. And
yeah.
I had stumbled into, like, these double, huge double, triple million record set from Reader's Digest that had all the great stuff.
Right, yeah.
Not just Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey. I'm talking about like stuff, Dave, that you know, because
yeah.
I was not well versed. This has been an absolute, folks, this has been an absolute education for me working with Dave. No, it has. It has with respect to old time radio.
Hey, you know, Dale, I was never a big fan of big band growing up. My brother was, I wasn't. But as I started hosting the shows and using a lot of the big band type stuff as background music and stuff, I really fell in love with it then. And, for me, it was a little later in life, but I really do appreciate this. And you can tell just by the sound of the bands, a lot of time who they are, like you can tell by the beat and the tuba, that this was Guy Lombardo, you know?
Yeah.
You could just tell by that. And they all have their own little signatures.
They do. It's much like stuff from our era. We can catch it right away. People that grew up on the big band, they know exactly who they're listening to in the first couple notes of the song.
Yep. Hey, Dale.
Hey, what?
I would like to mention that on our next Friday show, the very first show completed will be our 1,400th complete radio show that we've shared here on Erie House Radio.
Whoa!
1,400th.
Wow.
All right, everybody, go play a lotto number, 1400.
And it only took us 750 broadcasts. That's right. Last night was show number 750 overall of Erie House and Erie House Oldie Timey Radio.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So 7 years. When we started, we'd be lucky to get two shows, and we'd have one show and a lot of jabber, or two shows and a lot of jabber. And we've gotten a point where we can get either one full-hour show or sometimes three shows in a night, depending.
Yeah.
So it's just a very, very been very interesting along the way, a variety of shows and types of shows and comedies and radio drive-ins, as well as the dramas and the science fiction and the detectives and you name it. We've shared a little bit of everything so far.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What a milestone.
Yeah, it was a little bit more than 6 years ago that the Creepy Castle finally came to a close, and very, very shortly after, Erie House Radio started at first really mostly talk, and Dave came out to assist. Yeah, let me tell you, gang, it is tough to do a show, a talk show, all by your onesome, you know, all by your lonesome.
Yeah,
it is not easy. It is so much easier for me, at least, to have wonderful folks like you, like Gar, like the two of you and Gar, to bounce things off of. And I don't mean a rock.
Yeah. Well, because we all have different experiences and share those experiences. And even though Erie House was only a half an hour back then with a little bit of extra time, folks, a half hour can be a lot longer than you think if you don't have anything to back it up, you know.
Oh,
if it's just one person.
When you're hurting for something to say, it's an eternity. It's an absolute eternity. You're twisting in the wind thinking, I've got to be engaging. What the hell am I doing?
But it's audience
so much
enraptured.
Yeah. Well, it's so much easier when I have, first of all, an extremely knowledgeable cohort here, Dave, in the genre, because that was 2016, the summer of 2016 that all that happened. And then at the very, very beginning, January of 2017 is when we launched. We decided, we're definitely going to do old-time radio on a regular basis.
Forever and ever.
Because there's enough radio to do exactly that. There really is enough radio.
We'll be having the Dave and Dale IA characters continuing on after we're gone,
No, CW is going to take over.
That's right. No AI.
She's younger than
my
us.
Way.
She is. Well,
I've seen all the Terminator movies.
But she may run when she gets a chance. That's the thing, you know.
Just bolt for the door. Let me out of here. They twisted my mind.
Mind, help.
Our
help me, help me.
So what's happening next week on Erie House Radio, Dale? Besides
a whole lot of radio, we are going to things are getting a little cloudy. I don't know if I can tell. Yeah, things are clouding up at Erie House. We've got Suspense, Cloud 9, and High Adventure. And then CBS Radio Mystery Theater next Saturday.
Yep. Oh, that's High Adventure is another one of the even though there was one here in the U.S., this is another one from the South Africa.
Yep.
Oh,
and be prepared for an Erie House Radio drive-in double whammy weekend, okay? That's coming up in 2 weeks. More about that later. But it's back to the theater, gang. Back to the drive-in.
All right. Yep. So open up the trunk and sneak everybody in. That way you can only pay one ticket and have five people with you. There you go.
That's right.
I tried that once and they wouldn't let me out of the trunk.
Yeah, I was going to say, sneak as many people you can in the trunk. Plenty of room in there with those dead mobsters that we keep back there.
There you go.
Yeah, at least they weren't taking up any air. That's all I got to say.
Joe Pesci.
Oh, that's what happened. Yeah. Jimmy Hoffa, that's what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Hey, well, you know, got to have something to snack on from time to time.
Didn't hear from me.
Oh, my
God. Didn't hear from me. That's all I got to say.
Yep. Yeah. Jimmy Hoffa is in there with Elvis. And I don't know what else. And what's the guy that jumped from the plane? He's been in there so long, I forgot his name.
Oh, D.B.
Cooper. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, D.B. Cooper, we got him there in the trunk. Yep.
Oh, he's in there as well. D.B. Cooper.
And we'll all be here with you next week. Bye-bye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
And
when next we meet, in Frankenstone.
Yes, please.
Don't come alone.
Okay, I won't.
Can you dig it?
I'll get the shovel. The shovel's right over here. I'll dig it for you.
I only have a trowel. I only have a trowel.
Usually people say I'll get out the shovel when I start talking. But anyway, I don't know why they say that.
Oh.
No idea.
I know they always said to get on your put on your hip boots. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Another reason to keep the mask at the ready.
Yes. Looks like an episode of I Dream of Jeannie or something.
Ooh.
Maybe. Nope, maybe not. Oh, it looks like an astronaut training film. Sorry, just watching the Twitches with Garth Ghoul.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Looks like some
kind of this opening, okay.
Early NASA stuff. Oh, no, it's post-countdown serial. Why not? I don't remember post-countdown serial. That's an old commercial. It's in black and white.
How much sugar did they have in that? Vitamins, minerals, and about 5 pounds of sugar per ball.
And even some DDT. Ah, the good old days.
Ah, yes. Don't forget the radium. Fortified with radium.
Radium.
Do you know they actually still sell Tang? That stuff?
They do. There was like a grapefruit Tang, too, I think.
Yeah.
I like it.
The thing about it is NASA had nothing to do with Tang. Tang was around when they started the space program. It's just somebody in NASA decided, hey, why don't we feed this to the astronauts?
I think it's just that Tang paid NASA to take it up in the spaceship with him. That's what I understood it to be.
Everything I've heard about Tang, I've never found any to even try it, but from what I've heard about it, it tastes about as much like orange juice as a styrofoam cup tastes like chocolate chip ice cream. Ick.
Yeah, I don't know, but the funniest thing I ever saw was Al Bundy making a Tangwich.
A Tangwich.
He put Tang on bread because he was so pathetic. That's all they had.
I don't remember that one, but I remember when he did the toothpaste sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
It was in a live audience. Yeah, it was a live audience. And one of the people said, oh, man, don't do it.
Okay, here it is, the answer on Tang. Tang was used in early NASA crew space flights. In 1962, when Mercury astronaut John Glenn conducted eating experiments in orbit, Tang was selected for the menu. It was also used during some Gemini flights and also has been carried aboard numerous space shuttle missions. There you go.
Oh,
I'll be darned.
Those poor astronauts. Strike. Strike, I say. Strike.
I like the food processors on Star Trek. And also Robbie the Robot would create food, I believe.
Yeah, you could create anything.
Oh, there's a Tang commercial on the Twitch now. I'll be darned.
Oh,
it's like we knew it was going to happen.
Ooh. Wow, what a cool psychic bond.
Weird.
That's a weird world. It is. With that being said, gentlemen, I really must be away. So if I may, I'll do my final duty for the evening. I'll call the original. Come out of that cave, Mr. Durante. We're waiting for you right now.
Good night.
Put that goat back in the cave.
What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo, your lady.
We say, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night, folks.
Good night.
And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Night. Mrs. Calabash. Let everyone. You got lost in the cave. That's why no one could ever find her.
Not adjust your radio.
We will now return control of your radio to you, so you can join us next week on the same bat time, same bat channel.
That's batty.
Or good luck in prison.
Ooh.